You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Jamie Edwards, organizer with Trader Joe's United. As some Trader Joe's workers start to unionize. Meanwhile, Supreme Court drops more decisions today. The biggies still extant. Watch this space. Republican primary results become more or less a Trump flex. And meanwhile, what could be an ominous harbinger for Democrats, in a special election in Texas, the Republicans flip a seat that's been Democratic for 100 years. Also on the program today, a Republican commission in election commission in New Mexico refuses to certify the primary vote because of the presence of Dominion machines. Mitch McConnell supports a framework on the anemic gun deal. And Georgia Senate Republican nominee Herschel Walker has a Herschel Walker problem. Florida synagogue is suing Florida over its 15-week abortion ban as a violation of Jewish people's religious freedom.
We should do that all across the country.
Indeed. Biden threatens oil refineries over massive profits, may invoke emergency powers to increase refining capacity. Russia extends detention of WNBA star Brittany
Griner.
And Karen Bass now ahead of Caruso as L.A. mayor votes still coming in. Lastly, new study. Owning guns creates a higher risk of being killed for people in your home. What? All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Bringing you her catchphrase that she coined before anyone ever else did. Emma Vigeland with her special catchphrase about this day.
What it's day hump day.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. Yep. And Emma, of course, trademarked that years ago and has been living off of that like a child star.
That's how we got into the cul-de-sac business.
That's right. It was all the residuals you got for the use of Hump Day trademark. Can't use it without licensing fee going to Emma. So
it's also why I'm just like so messed up in the head because of the whole child star
thing.
Have you seen Mona Lisa Smile?
I don't know what any of that means. Yeah. But, I mean, I've seen
that. The audience does.
Yeah. Well, all right, there you go.
That was my first on-camera appearance as an extra in that movie.
Yeah, but I'm talking about you were the child star of licensing.
I know, I got that.
Deals,
so. Yeah. I know my own history. So.
Okay, it's going to be one of those days, folks. Let's get into this. This came up. There had been reports of tours given by congresspeople in the days or really the day before the attack on the Capitol. Now, there were two issues at hand. One was, were there people surveilling inside the Capitol building knowing on January 5th that they were going to breach the Capitol building on January 6th? That would implicate people in this being a planned, premeditated insurrection in the Capitol, as opposed to like people just got carried away. You know, it happens. The other question it raised, were they getting help from the inside? We remember it was in Oregon. I think there was a state senator or a state assembly person who opened the door for protesters.
Yeah, I think like his name was like Mike Nearman, which is very close to Inside Man, which is how I remember that.
There you go. So the question was that the case here? And the representative was Barry Loudermilk, Republican from Georgia, who was giving this tour. And there is a video of a man who was on Loudermilk's tour and also at the Capitol on January 6th. And you can see this guy sort of checking out.
Reconnaissance.
We should say Loudermilk was ultimately exonerated by the Capitol Police. And here is that video now, January 6th, the previous day on January 5th. This is all, we don't need this part because I've already expressed it.
Here at the Washington Monument, Washington, D.C. Say hello to Facebook.
Hey, what's going on, man? Glad to be here, bro.
This is our fearless leader.
Hey, baby.
Dan Hamilton.
Check out my flag I made, guys. See it? There you go, baby. That's for a certain person.
That's right. That's for somebody special.
Okay, so this is, incidentally, this is the man in... On the day of January 6th.
On the day of. The footage of his tour is at the end, towards the end of the clip. But that was, yeah, so we don't need this. This is just the January 6th committee's, like, expository editing.
It's about 2 minutes into the clip where we see them actually doing reconnaissance.
Okay, let's see that part.
So, yeah, you just get, yeah, this is the tour that he was doing. Taking photos of
that's a very awkward thing to be doing. Like, here's a picture of me taking a picture
of this beautiful
stairway. I'm not going to be talking to the congressman.
Yeah,
and here he is talking
about security checkpoints,
taking pictures of security checkpoints, and
for those listening,
random
is...
you can't hear this. Obviously, he's just shooting random stuff.
These people are like, why are you taking a photo of this?
It's in like the part of the Capitol that's not public facing either. Like the walls are, it's not like the grand columns and stuff. It's just administrative walls and that sort of stuff that they're taking pictures of.
So, I mean, this is just another brick in the evidence that's being built that this was a premeditated insurrection. The guy went in there to see what entryways, what exit points, how they could easily access the halls of Congress behind the scenes, in, as Matt said, in the areas that were not public-facing. If you are watching on video, you can see that the pictures that he's taking that's not sightseeing. It's just ways to infiltrate.
I super want to remember this. Yeah, I want to remember this poorly lit stairway.
Yeah,
exactly. This is where the best part is him taking a picture of that as the congressman is talking to somebody else, and he's just like interested only in the stairway.
Yeah,
and I imagine there were also signs that would indicate where that was that we can't see in that surveillance footage. But that's what was going on there.
And the footage from before showed him with a flag that had a pointy end on it. A sort of spear. I couldn't tell if it was a bullet or...
It looked like a bullet, but it was low quality.
Yeah, or either way, some sort of allusion to weaponry, if it's a spike or if it's a bullet that, you know, you want to perceive as a threat. That's a connection of his reconnaissance effort plus the violence that he's imbuing in his statement.
And then the question becomes, what made these people think they could do that? Put aside, you know, whether people perceive them as being inept or whatever. But what makes people think that they're going to be able to rush the Capitol on a day when not only is the House in session, but the vice president is there and the Senate is also voting? I mean, what That is not an idea. Like, anybody with even a modicum of intelligence realizes, like, there's going to be a lot of security there. Or maybe there's not going to be. Maybe we will be the one group that will be able to get through, that will be able to crash this. I mean, you need to have a, you need to have some measure of confidence. And where does that confidence come from? That is the question, I think, ultimately, that I don't know if we're going to get the answers in the course of the next couple of days. But that really feels like the real question. I mean, the one thing that the January 6th Commission, at least so far in terms of the testimony we haven't heard about, is what was happening on the police National Guard side. And I suspect that's what we're going to hear over the next couple of days, is why did these people who clearly were planning to enter the Capitol building think that they could enter the Capitol building? Because any other reasonable person would be like, there's no way we're getting in there.
You get shot.
We get shot. It's not like there haven't been protests in front of the Capitol before. It's not like we haven't seen. I mean, we saw what happened when there were protests, peaceful protests in Independence Park, right? They came in with all sorts of federal correctional officers and like these different squads of feds and soldiers. In some cases, you know, beat the hell out of people. Why did these guys think that they had that, you know, the Red Sea was going to part more or less? Why did they think there was only going to be like five people guarding, you know, different entrances to these things, calling for backup that never shows up? That's the question, I think, that, you know,
outside of just like their general like right wing and white privilege. Right.
Right.
I mean, then that's like the larger question about who inside knew something.
And what is it exactly, if it was just a protest, what exactly was the reconnaissance for? Because you don't do reconnaissance if you think we're just going to get in there and, you know, chant in the lobby or wherever we wind up. I mean, it suggests that they were looking for someone or something, because otherwise, you know, what difference does it make where this, you know, where this staircase leads? So I think there's a lot more that I don't know that we'll ever find out, but there's a lot more for us to find out about what happened on that day. We're going to be talking to Jamie Edwards, organizer with Trader Joe's United, a little bit later in the program. First, a word from our sponsor. Our sponsor, who not only is sponsoring today's episode, but has been for years now sponsoring my breakfast and my kids' breakfast. I mean, they're not literally sponsoring it. I mean, they just we eat the cereal. I've been trying to eat better for I'm always trying to eat better, but I've started to like just be a little bit more careful about my carbs. I don't know why you're looking at me like that.
No, I'm off camera because my coffee cup's leaking.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been trying to be a little bit more, you know, careful with my carbs. I'm not cutting out carbs, but, you know, that was one of the things about breakfast cereals that I sort of avoided. And then you get those, like, healthy breakfast cereals, and they taste horrible. But they don't have to be boring and horrible tasting. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you love, but without all the bad stuff. It's also amazing as a midnight snack, right before bed, or at 3 in the morning when I usually get up. One of the things that I've been eliminating quite vigorously for years now is sugar. And, you know, one of the other things you need to supply yourself with is protein. Well, hello, Magic Spoon. Most Magic Spoon flavors, besides Honey Nut, have 0 grams of sugar. And Honey Nut has only 1 gram. There's also 13 to 14 grams of protein, only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. Plus, there's only 140 calories per serving. Magic Spoon is keto-friendly. It is gluten-free. It is grain-free. It is soy-free. It is low-carb. And you can build your own box. They have 9 available flavors. You create your own custom bundle. Cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter. when I say cocoa and peanut butter, that's when I start to like get a little bit of like hunger pangs. Cookies and cream, maple waffle, blueberry muffin, cinnamon roll, my favorite, and my kid's favorite, Honey Nut. Even more exciting, Magic Spoon just brought back their cereal bars. They were so popular, they even brought them back permanently. It's the perfectly convenient on-the-go companion for your cereal. Folks, check it out. Go to magicspoon.com/majorityreport. Grab a custom bundle of cereal. Be sure to use our promo code MAJORITYREPORT at checkout to save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they refund your money. They don't ask any questions. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/majorityreport. Use the code MAJORITYREPORT to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode and for allowing me to feed some cereal to my kids and have full of sugar that they love. So there's that. Yesterday, we had, and I should remind everybody, it is your support that makes this show possible. If you want to get the free show, free of commercials, become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you want to make sure this show continues to survive and thrive, become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And lastly, if you want access to the member show, jointhemajorityreport.com.
And if you're a member, you can see the Boston show.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, I forgot about that. That went up on Monday and on over the last weekend.
Sunday, yep.
Yeah.
So the Boston show is, well, the live Boston show is live now for members.
Amazing.
Recorded live.
Right.
Yesterday, we lamented the absence of Mike Lindell.
I know.
He has been, it really is amazing. No one is out there championing Mike Lindell. None of the free speech warriors, none of the cancel culture people. They're not talking about Mike Lindell, how he has been canceled from Fox. He was canceled from, I feel like he was canceled from Newsmax even.
First, they come for you on Fox, then they come for you on Newsmax. They come for you on OAN. I don't even think he gets a spot there anymore.
But Steve Bannon, however, who contends there are no conspiracies, there are no coincidences. On Real America's Voice has Mike Lindell on, and Lindell is on to something because apparently Bill Barr will consult with him.
I only got a minute. I got a couple of questions. I just need yes or no. Has the committee...
Pause it. This is... You got to really make sure... with Mike Lindell, you got to say it's a yes or no answer. Please don't get me sued.
I only got a minute. I got a couple of questions. I just need yes or no. Has the committee reached out to you to go through all the voluminous material you have about the election of 3 November 2020, sir? Yes or no?
No, they haven't. And it's really, and that's sad too, because I've offered, I'd love to come to your little committee as long as you nationally televise it there, Miss Pelosi.
Okay, fine. Number one. So they're too gutless to get the information you have. Has Bill Barr ever reached out to you to ask any questions, given all the high
profile?
Pause
it for 1 second. I want to go back. The idea of Mike Lindell addressing Pelosi directly, and just, of course, in his mind, Pelosi just turns to an aide and goes, "Oh yeah,
he's got us.
He's got us. God darn it."
Also, like, notice how Bannon speaks in code. I mean, this is just kind of the nerdy garbage that these people like, the conspiracy nuts. The election of 3 November 2020.
Right, exactly.
It's like, as if this is some sort of, like, you know, I think we got it. You're not speaking in code. The normies are able to discern what election you're talking about.
And just a reminder, we're talking at 1600 past the hour.
Yeah.
And it's 1605 Greenwich Mean Time. All right, continue.
Okay, fine. Number one, so they're too gutless to get the information you have. Has Bill Barr ever reached out to you to ask any questions, given all the high profile that you have about this, about anything that you found in regard to election fraud in the last 2 years, sir?
No, and he's actually avoided me, Steve. I mean, I've put out stuff, you know, he tried to get stuff to him in the past, and it's a complete block.
Lindell, poor.
You hate to see friends.
A complete block.
Break up like that.
COVID's
yeah.
been tough on a lot of different friend groups, and some are making it through.
What's interesting is that, and you know, Fox refused to play
the hearings on primetime. Then they played them during the morning. Of course, that's not when their viewers are there, because a lot of their folks don't wake up until a little bit later in the day. And but Bannon, they're doing, you know, they must deal with Bill Barr. I think, you know, for two reasons. One, again, I still contend that Bill Barr was providing for Trump the best sort of mitigation and defense that he could have in the event that there ever was to be charges. I doubt there will be, but that he was out of touch with reality, as opposed to was quite aware that he was perpetrating a fraud on the United States. But in the event that any people out there who are supporters of Donald Trump hear from Bill Barr, you must begin the project of demonizing Bill Barr and saying Bill Barr did not do his due diligence. He did not sit down with Mike Lindell, who has now been bounced from all of these networks and being chased by, service people for various lawsuits. He did not check with Mike Lindell, who had all the goods, basically stashed.
And all the high profile, as Bannon politely puts.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't talk to you with all your high profile?
Like. Yeah, it seems a little odd, because we know
expertise.
That you keep all this data under your pillow, as it were, and that they wouldn't be interested in hearing any of this. Very suspicious.
It is, but weren't Mike Lindell's findings included in the PowerPoint presentation that was given to within the White House on election fraud? Am I remembering that correctly, that there was something that...
Well, some of his stuff was delivered, you know, from Rudy Giuliani.
Right. This was a part of, you know, it was included in some of the White House materials on how to combat this, or at the very least the Trump campaign materials. Bill Barr was definitely familiar with it. It's just, he maybe didn't get to, like, the third or fourth layer or the 400th layer that...
Or
that Lindell's maybe, talking about.
Or maybe Bill Barr got to by the deep state.
Wow. That would be ironic for a guy with his background.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to this topic here. The Mitch McConnell has said that he supports the framework of this anemic gun bill. It is unclear to me whether he's actually just teeing it up to fail in the Senate and,
I don't think so, though.
I don't think so either, because this thing is so anemic. And
McConnell understands when he has a win in front of him, and the Republicans want to be able to say, well, we did a little bit of something, which is actually just window dressing, because... He recognizes there's a tension right now.
Or I would say there's also an alternate theory that he realizes he has a loss, and so he's going to be on the winning side of this. Like we mentioned the other day, half the people who signed up out of the 10 Republicans, four of them are retiring. And the other five who signed up were just elected 16 months ago, so they don't have to face their voters again for another almost 4.5 years. And then there was Mitt Romney, who
this is his political brand. So,
exactly.
I mean, frankly, this is, he would be voting for this regardless.
And so it could be McConnell just thinks, like, okay, well, I might as well be on the winning side of this because make it seem like the Republican Party is with this, as opposed to only people who are basically out the door or have just got, reelected.
Which is why I'm becoming convinced that progressive Democrats should
block it.
Block this.
Block it by requiring more. Remember, the House passed a bill that was far more vigorous. So they still have to meet in conference. And the idea is have the House negotiators hold out, have the bill go back to the Senate, and watch those 10 Republicans flee, essentially. But let's play this clip number 9. This is from Newsmax, and it is with Missouri Senate candidate Mark McCloskey, who has, and incidentally, this is that couple that came out of their house when they heard that BLM was there with semi-automatic rifles.
Went out in their like balcony with AR-15.
I think they went out in the grass in the front lawn.
Brandished
and,
it at them.
And they're being asked what should be done to protect schools from gun violence.
And, you know, of course, now after the, you know, tragic shooting in Uvalde, there's discussion of how do we protect our schools? Should teachers be armed? Should there be police officers at schools, armed guards, what have you? And on Monday, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, he signed legislation that would allow school employees to carry guns after just 24 hours of training. Mark, you're running for U.S. Senate. It's in your home state of Missouri. If you become a senator, what action would you take to protect the Second Amendment?
Well, you know, I think the Second Amendment, it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Shall is a command word. It's not optional. I
pause it for 1 second. Is the word people in the Second Amendment? I don't think so. It's the right of the people to maintain a well-regulated militia. I mean,
it's not a command word, Sam.
All right, continue. Sorry.
Mark, you're running for U.S. Senate. It's in your home state of Missouri. If you become a senator, what action would you take to protect the Second Amendment?
Sorry, but I legit thought she was going to ask, like, protect kids, but, like, also save gun rights.
Well, you know, I think the Second Amendment, it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Shall is a command word. It's not optional. I am torn because you have to protect the kids. But turning schools into prisons is not a good option either. What we need to do is get away from this culture of lawlessness, this culture of death, this society where there's no common decency, there's no common morality. You know, when we were kids, no one thought about going in and shooting up a school because we were all going in the same direction. We had a common principles, and now moral relativism for the last 70 years has torn us all apart. So that people just, you know, everybody has a cell phone. And the more antisocial you can be, the more disruptive you can be.
I'll pause it for a second. Now, I should just say the word "people" is in the Second Amendment, and but it is qualified.
They leave out the first half of the sentence.
Exactly. Yeah. Qualified by the need of a well-regulated militia. But I'm trying to think. 70 years ago, what was it that started this moral relativism that started happening 70 years ago? Like what? 1950. That's when we started getting moral relativism. Like leading up to what? Like what was going on? Like in the 50s, late 50s, and early 60s.
Yeah, it's like we do civil rights, and then August 1st, 1966, the University of Texas tower shooting happens immediately, just because of
all the moral relativism, and the culture of death. Yeah,
things become more relative when the color complexion of the general population that this guy has to worry about changes.
Perhaps
a little
the gender
bit.
Too.
When the Bell Tower shooting happened in Austin and 14 people died, did they blame it on like radios? I wonder. Like it's all these radios causing these people to.
There's a lot of radio.
It's modernity.
When you get on Facebook, and that's part of the whole crisis. What we have to do is develop a new attitude where kids are brought up with good, wholesome Christian values, and they think they have an intrinsic sense of what's right and wrong rather than moral relativism. And that'll do more for saving kids than all the guns and all the locked doors in the world.
Those kids that died had moral relativism.
They died of moral relativism.
Yeah. Hmm. You know, Christ is definitely in favor of violent threats with guns. Those are the kinds of values that were imbued in his upbringing.
The enormous increase in the number of guns in this country had nothing to do with it. It was just simply the moral relativism that started in 1950.
When anybody makes a cultural critique that like about violence in this country, all you just need to do is copy and paste values and culture with too many black people. That's what they're talking about.
Well, I will say this: you know, there was like and I haven't seen the actual tweet, but I heard that. Some filmmakers from Hollywood, I think it was like Judd Apatow and Adam McKay and, I don't know, Jimmy Kimmel and Mark Ruffalo, all of whom I have varying different opinions about their politics and their value to, you know, a better society. But they committed to not having gun violence in their movies. And aside from the fact that as far as I know, none of them really do any movies with any gun violence. I guess, you know, that's also a way maybe Ruffalo just to say, like, I'm done with the MCU. That's good. I don't have to deal with that anymore. I don't know. But aside from that, I have no doubt they feel like they are making a symbolic gesture that is helpful. And I would say, no, actually, you're making the absolutely wrong symbolic gesture. The problem with gun violence in this country is not a function of video games or our movie culture. Every one of those movies that are made with gun violence in this country, everyone, are made because they know, the filmmakers know, the producers know, the studios know, they can sell it overseas over and over again. Those action movies are the ones that travel the most around the world. So it's not like our culture is unique in gun violence movies. Our culture is unique in that there is such easy access to weapons that make it much easier to kill people. Like weapons like this one. This guy is just showing...
This is the guy they just asked about keeping kids and guns safe.
The
pink Brooks Brothers polo is just really adds to it, and I love that it speaks to his tenuous grip on his manhood there, that he carries the big AR-15, and his wife has like a mini pistol that she can
like a little Beretta
in her pocketbook, right? Because that's appropriate for a lady.
There you go,
it's classy.
Yeah. I get the big one.
But the point is, obviously, it's not our culture. There's many problems with our culture, without a doubt. People can argue as to what those problems are. But regardless, the low-hanging fruit is don't allow for such easy access for weapons that can so easily kill multiple people. I mean, that's just it. And intimidate law enforcement, for that matter. There is a... there's been a couple of studies over the past 2 months that have come out that are really relevant at this point. One study that was recently published in the Annals of Internal Medicine examines the question of how helpful is it to have a gun in the home in terms of protecting people in the home, not just the gun owner, but people in the home. They studied 18 million adults living in California. 2,300 of them died by homicide over the 12-year study. And apparently California has a very extensive archive of firearm transactions. So they could identify that population out of those 18 million people who personally owned guns. And this is important, who lived with gun owners, right? I buy a gun, I license it to me, and then I have my partner and my kids maybe living in the house. The goal of the study was to see whether homicides were more or less likely to occur in homes with handguns. And apparently there have been studies like this in the past, all of them finding higher homicide rates in homes with guns. But this study had three novel features. This is according to one of the lead researchers, a guy named David Studert. First, he writes in Time, rather than calculating risks to the household as a whole, as the prior research has done, we focused on household members who lived with handgun owners but weren't themselves owners. In other words, the secondhand risk. What is the danger to you if you are living with someone who owns a gun? And apparently there's very little that's known about this type of risk. It just measures, like, what are the chances of you as a gun owner of dying? Second, their study was many times larger than previous studies of the relationship between gun access and homicide risk. So they could look at particular kinds of homicides, those occurring in or around the home, and at those at the hands of family members, Measuring the dangers and the protective benefits of gun access by examining deaths at the home makes sense because that is where most guns are kept most of the time. It's also where the plurality of homicides occur. And lastly, when they measure the homicide risk, they compared people who were living with the handgun owners to people who were not. And the comparisons were always made between people residing in the same neighborhood. In other words, you're controlling for any outside contexts, like socioeconomic status, local crime rates, local economic conditions, et cetera, et cetera. None of that was a variable in this instance, or minimal variable. So this is what they found. People living with handgun owners died by homicide at twice the rate of their neighbors in gun-free homes. Same neighborhood, across the street, whatever it was, twice as likely. So in other words, your home is a hard target, and the people living with you in that hard target die by homicide twice the rate of their neighbors. That doesn't mean, and that includes burglars coming in or home invaders, whatever fantasy notion you have as a gun owner as to what the threats are. It turns out the threat is the gun.
Matt's talks about this all the time, about how in the United States we're taught to only feel empowered in our consumption, empowered as consumers. And there's something like very sad about the mythology of protecting your family from a home invasion. And then obviously the statistics bearing out that it's more dangerous to have the gun than in any perceived threat. Because like the threat is our system that kills us. It's our completely morally bankrupt, cruel system that people die at insane rates of not having health care. And the violence is within the home as opposed to the outside threat, which we're conditioned to perceive as opposed to, like, I don't know, the system.
If you're having trouble conceptualizing this, I don't know if most people are, but there's an easier way to do it. Think of it this way. Homes where someone has laid booby traps for outside, invaders, right? Like, oh, I've set up a booby trap here where if this tripwire is, it's going to blow up. Is it easier for you to understand the concept then when you realize, like, oh, okay, yes, the likelihood of people dying in that home is twice as high because they're booby trapped. And essentially, that's what a gun is. It's a booby trap. On top of that, people living with handgun owners were 7 times more likely to be shot by their spouse or intimate partner. Mm. So not only does it not make you safer, not only does it make you twice as likely to die by homicide, it also means that you're 7 times more likely to die because of violence between you and your partner, regardless of who owns the gun. You both had access to it and should be of no surprise. The vast majority of victims in those partner shootings, 84%, were female. And, you know, part of that is most people who live with gun owners and don't themselves own guns are women.
Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to check, like, if you just dropped in a generic instance of, or a random instance of gun violence in America, it's probably the situation where someone who's financially dependent on somebody who's also menacing them or threatening them with a gun regularly.
Homicides perpetrated by strangers, right? Homicides of this kind, according to one of the researchers, were relatively uncommon in their study population. Much less common than deaths perpetrated by the victim's partner, family members, or friends. But when they happened, because they do happen, we've all seen the movies. I mean, obviously it happens in real life. People living with gun owners did not experience them less often than people in gun-free homes. In other words, even if you control for just looking at the question of what happens when those people do the home invasion or whatever it is, having a gun owner in the house and a gun in the house does not provide any protection.
It's also, it reminds me just really briefly of the Republican groomer talking point about teachers and being groomed outside the home, where sexual abuse most often happens with a family member and somebody that the child knows.
Just want to read this one sentence. We did not detect even a hint of such protective benefits. Mm. Not even a hint against what ostensibly everyone who owns a gun in their home says is why it's there. Totally disregarding the booby trap quality of it, that it's more likely to end up doubling the chances of someone in that house dying by homicide. And the other thing that I would imagine is, I don't even know if this is calculating accidental deaths.
Suicides, does it count that either?
Well, there was a second study by the same team, which was published in the Journal of American Medicine Psychiatry on April 29th. And it switched the focus of secondhand risks to suicide in a large sample of women living with handgun owners in California. Women living with handgun owners in California, and again, the vast majority of handgun owners are men, were 50% more likely to die by suicide than their female neighbors in gun-free homes. Now, it's possible that there's some dynamic where men who buy guns and the women who live with them are more depressed and more suicidal. That's possible, which is a totally another reason maybe to examine the question. But they certainly were fifty percent more likely to die by suicide, and more than four times as likely to die by suicides that involved the use of firearms. In other words, they're living with someone who had a gun made it four times as likely that you would die by suicide by gun, which means that the access to the gun implicates the rate of suicide. Now, I don't have the data to extrapolate here, but if that dynamic exists, if it is four times more likely that you will die by suicide if you're a woman in California, this is what the parameters of the study are, four times more likely you will die by suicide by living in California with a gun owner than if you don't have access to a gun in the home. Then you could extrapolate that if you didn't have access, easy access to a gun outside the home, it would be even less likely that you would commit suicide. These are all obvious dynamics, but there's increasingly more data to support it. To the extent that there isn't data, it is because the NRA and largely Republicans, some Democrats, but largely overwhelmingly Republicans, have prevented our government from keeping track on these things. That's why this data is in California, where they have a long history of gun control and a robust one. And so without the data, you can't make these proclamations. But you can extrapolate from these dynamics for something that is really common sense. I mean, if we all had access to grenades as easily as we had guns, is there any doubt that we would have mass grenade attacks where we would see mass deaths by grenades? I mean, is there any doubt? Does anybody have any doubt about that? If people could get grenades with the same ease in which they could get semi-automatic weapons, do people think that there wouldn't be an increase in death by grenade?
That's an arm, and we infringe upon people's right to have it, and it's good that we do that.
Yeah, I think so. It's hard to square. I mean, well-regulated militia. I mean, it's like, look, I know they didn't have grenades when they wrote those words in 1789, but guess what else they didn't have? Semi-automatic weapons. In fact, I think it's 1789. In fact, I'm sure of it. There was no multiple rounds.
Bullet was invented in, when was it? 1800s?
No, you had bullets way before then, but it was single shots.
Right.
Stick that thing, load it up like you load up a cannon. So there's no consistency here. Let's be honest. We should have access to grenades at the Dick's Sporting Goods store. And not just grenades. Any arms?
Javelins.
Javelin missiles. I mean, those are going to be expensive. They're going to be expensive.
FAA might be upset about that, but you know what? Freedom's freedom.
Freedom is freedom. And frankly, like, I don't think I could afford the top of the line tank, but maybe I don't care about gas mileage. I just want to be safe when I'm driving the highway.
Yep.
And makes traffic a little bit easier. Boom, out of the way. Car's coming towards me. Stand my ground. Boom. But we'll put a link. Let's put a link to that study. I mean, to this piece too. It's in I think it was in Time. I think I saw Dave Roberts also tweeting out that study the other day or today or yesterday. I don't know when it was. All right. Yeah. Let's do this. As you know, Herschel Walker, the Republican nominee for the Senate in Georgia. We're going to start to key in more and more on these races because what happens in Georgia, what happens in Ohio, what happens in Pennsylvania, what happens in Nevada, a couple more states that escape me, New Hampshire, off the top of my head. That's going to be really the most important races of 2022. We could retain the House, but unlikely, we're going to get legislation passed. I mean, I guess if we were to do big gains in the Senate, but I think that's unlikely. The key is maintaining control of the Senate so that there can be, so that we can continue to put judges on the bench. Ooh, boy. I just saw that new tweet. So let's take a look at Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker, you should know this, is an extremely moral man. He has some very, very strong moral beliefs about the responsibility of fathers. And here he is on the Charlie Kirk Show expressing some of that.
We're better.
And I want to apologize to the African-American community because I know the fatherless home is a major, major problem. And Herschel Walker, who was born in Wrightsville, Georgia, I took care of a lot of people in my hometown. I took care of a lot of the places around where I grew up. I was being like a father to some of those kids that may have had fathers. But because the Lord Jesus Christ blessed me to be an athlete, I should have went into the cities of Chicago. I should have told a lot of my young African-American brothers there and my kids there, guys, hold on, get your education. It's going to be okay. Get your education. It's going to be all right. Hey, respect the police. Go home safe. Get home. Get home to your families. And remember, you can leave the wife, but don't leave your child. We give them those old things that I was brought up on from my father. Because I was blessed to have a mom and a dad. And I'm saying some kids are not. And Charles, I want to say this. And I want to say this to all kids, not just the African-American kid. This is major for them, but to all kids. Because there are problems in the United States of America that just not stemming for African-American.
The important thing is you can leave the wife, but you don't leave the kid. You're there for the child.
Yes.
And, one of the things actually, somebody just told me this, that they've done brain measuring of children, and you it doesn't matter what you do with your kid. Literally, they say, like, just sitting there and being present, like actually, you know, paying attention to the kid, they have the same brain response, and it's healthy. Herschel Walker told Diamond and Silk in 2020. Now, we don't have the clip of this because My Diamond and Silk membership ran out.
Sorry.
Wrong. You know, your card expired.
It's not on auto pay.
Weren't able to renew it.
And he said, if you have, quote, a child with a woman, even if you have to leave that woman, you don't leave the child, which
he
just said.
That.
Yeah.
That's his
campaign line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right after he refers to himself in the third person.
Correct.
Always a good sign.
Now, what does he mean by don't leave the child? I think it is like, you know, you got to be part of their life.
Yeah. I mean, and he's passed this down to his own child here. I just want to put this up really quick.
Christian Walker.
Matt and Bradley.
Yeah, pop
this
up. This
is his son. He's been...
Who's Nick Cannon?
He's a celebrity who has had a bunch of children with some women recently.
Christian Walker says, why don't you read this tweet?
Nick Cannon is... And this was June 8th, so just a week ago. Nick Cannon is everything wrong with our culture, knocking women up and then being too busy banging other women to take care of his children. Fathers, control your ding-a-ling, get home, and raise your damn kids. He's he's passed these values down to his son.
Yeah, and Christian Walker, has had the benefit of Herschel Walker raising him.
And we saw how that turned out.
I mean, look, you can't...
Counterpoint.
Counterpoint. Okay, fair enough. But
that's anecdotal.
Now, apparently the Daily Beast has reported that Herschel Walker, or I should say, what's his son's name?
Christian.
Christian Walker has a half-brother that he doesn't know about.
What?
I mean, maybe he knows about, but that's sort of weird. Maybe this is a way of Christian Walker being a little passive-aggressive with his own dad. It turns out Herschel Walker has a secret son. The son, whose name the Daily Beast is withholding out of privacy concerns, has grown up more than 1,500 miles from Walker's Texas home. And the mother, whose name they're also withholding, had to take Walker to court a year after giving birth in order to secure a declaration of paternity and child support. And they have talked to multiple people about this. Apparently, Walker sends Christmas and birthday presents. He has otherwise not played an active parental role in raising the second son. In other words, he hasn't been there for the kid. He sent a present because Jesus said, you're going to be a good football player and you're going to get a lot of money. And so you'll be able to send a Christmas present and a birthday present to your son.
Did he send a father?
The child also has not met or spoken with his half-brother Christian, the person said. I wonder if Christian knows that he has a half-brother who his father has not spent any time with at home.
He knows now.
I guess so. The Walker's campaign manager, Scott Paradise, told the Daily Beast in a statement that Walker is, quote, proud of his children. So that's good.
Is he in their lives?
Herschel had a child years ago when he wasn't married. He supported the child and continues to do so. He's proud of his children. To suggest that Herschel is hiding the child because he hasn't used him in his political campaign is offensive and absurd. Well, I don't think it's a question of him using it. It's that Herschel Walker and his son, I'm sorry, his other son, his second son, the son that he raised.
The secret one.
The non-secret
son.
Both feel that you should be raising the child in the home.
Yeah.
Even if you're not with the mother.
Also, we didn't try to use this kid in politics like we're using Christian. Like, you don't get credit for not using one son when you are using the other son.
Well, we didn't do that one because Herschel does not have a speaking relationship with it. He may. Let's see. There it is.
What Herschel Walker is doing with like that kind of, you know, cultural critique of black people
pathologizing
for the Charlie Kirk audience or for whatever. I mean, it really is quite despicable. The hypocrisy is like one angle to it. Naturally, of course, all of these conservatives are hypocrites in some way or another when they proselytize their morality. But like the role that he plays for white conservatives to be like, yeah, he's saying what I really think.
Yeah.
That there is a level of despicableness that I think, I don't know, it's infuriating.
I mean, and it's funny because, he did raise Christian, right, because Christian is also using his minority status to speak directly against, like, things that would help that minority. So
yeah.
It's like a family. It's a family cottage industry.
Their family values. Their family values.
Folks, it is time for us to end the free half of the program.
Well, do we have our guest?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, geez. Sorry. Oh, do we have him?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, him. God. I had no idea.
Sorry. You might have missed
I didn't see any
some
of the tweets.
The messages.
Oh, God. I did not see it. Sorry. Yes, let's go to... do we need to take a quick break to set up the shot?
They're on the phone. They're on the phone.
Okay. They're on the phone? Yeah. All right. Oh, that's right. Okay. We have them on the phone. Oh, that's right. Apologies.
That might have been why I was looking at you.
Which one is it? Number
weird.
Two?
Yeah. Okay. Number two, yep.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, folks. I want to welcome to the program Jamie Edwards, an organizer with Trader Joe's United. Jamie, apologies. We had a little bit of confusion here. I'm so used to folks showing up on the video. I know you don't have access to video stuff at the moment. Thanks for joining us. I'm here with Emma Viglin. Oh, I'm not called in yet. Oh, sorry. That sorry would explain that. I don't understand what's going on here. All right, bear with me.
All good.
I was supposed to be called in.
Too much sebede.
Yeah. So, oh, there we go. Hi, Jamie.
Thanks for joining us. I'm here with Emma Viglin.
That's our stream, Jamie. If you could unmute that or mute that.
Oh.
Jamie.
Jamie, hello. Welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us. I'm here with Emma Viglin. I'm sorry about the confusion.
You gotta mute our YouTube.
Oh, sorry.
That's
all
right. Yeah, just turn the YouTube off if you can.
Oh, yeah, sorry. All right, so I turned that off.
Okay, Jamie, thanks for joining us. I'm still getting feedback from the... Okay. Can you turn off your... Do you have the show on in the background?
Oh, see.
Or I think maybe we're on speaker.
No, we're not on speaker. Sorry, let me see. I'm going to turn off my AC and see if that gives you better audio. Is that a little more clear now?
Yeah, I think we're good now.
Okay, cool.
Jamie, tell us, how did the campaign get started?
So I just want to say, I'm a long time, viewer of the Majority Report, so I'm excited to be on. Hi, Sam. Hi, Emma.
Hi.
So it sort of got started, I want to say earlier this year, that's when I was sort of brought into it. I had actually attempted to organize at the very beginning of the pandemic. It didn't really get past the night crew. So the beginning of this year, I was reached out, to by some people who were working in the morning crew, trying to figure some of the stuff out. And we sort of joined forces. And since I already had sort of a understanding of where some of our support would be, we were able to move pretty quickly with that. So, yeah.
So this was completely organic in terms of you and your fellow workers coming together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And where is the Trader Joe's that is located? And are you the first Trader Joe's to organize?
So we're located in Hadley, Massachusetts. And, yeah, we'd be the first one to unionize. So hopefully we'll be making some history.
Oh, that's exciting. And you're rooting for the Celtics.
not a big sports person, but, yeah, sure.
All right. I know folks outside of Springfield were also bummed about the Red Sox going to Worcester. Let's not get into that. all right, so what is it that caused you and your fellow workers? And it's interesting that it took sort of the night shift and the AM shift to sort of meet and before you realize this was a store-wide problem, I guess. But
absolutely,
that Trader Joe's has been there for quite a while, right? I mean, I think at least 20 years close to it.
Yeah, roughly 20 years.
And so, what has happened that had both the night folks and the morning folks decide they need to organize?
So there's been a lot of things that's happened. A lot of things have been sort of like issues with changes in policy. You know, like early on, before I even got there, because I've been with the company like roughly 9 years now. Before I got there, there was the option of overtime. Then that got removed. Then we also, in response to the ACA being passed, the company required people to work 10 more hours a week on average to still get the same insurance. Also, retirement benefits changed. It started off with like 15% to 10%. And right now, it's pretty much entirely discretionary. They don't have to contribute anything at this point. So, like, those are some of the changes in terms of policy. But I think really the big thing that got people serious about this was when COVID started and seeing that the company wasn't really taking our safety as seriously as their bottom line.
What were some examples of Trader Joe's not taking you all seriously in terms of safety precautions?
So the first one that, like, I feel like really blows people's mind is, like, at the very beginning of the pandemic, it was actually against the rules to wear a mask or gloves because it would scare the customers away. So, like, that was like a moment where, like, I feel like a lot of people got upset and realized, like, hey, if we don't have a say in our workplace, it can actually be a risk to our health and safety. And even after that, when, like, it was mandated in our county that we would have to wear masks at work, it wasn't really enforced consistently with the customers. And even after that, we had, like, a policy that was pretty much, like, limiting the amount of customers that would be in the store. But when crew members are running the doors, you know, seeing how many people are coming in and out, it was very common for us to be pressured by management to bring more people in to boost up the sales. And, like, we have a fairly large store. The aisles are pretty small. So it would end up in a situation where, like, you have to get to where you're going, you would have to walk through a crowded aisle of people who largely aren't wearing masks and, like, squeeze your way through. So that was definitely not something that was ideal, like, at that point in time before there was even vaccines available, where, like, social distancing and masks were our only way of actually being safe.
And Jamie, did you find that were the profits for Trader Joe's, like, dropping? Is that why they needed to cut back on benefits for workers?
No, they weren't. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Trader Joe's has been doing better as time's been going on. They weren't negatively impacted by the crisis. No, so.
All right. Well, so what has been the management's response? I know in the past they have been pretty vehement about not about trying to quash any union activity. How did they respond? Mm-hmm. To the extent that you know anything about that, tell me historically, and has there been a change in the way that they responded to your organizing?
So I don't know about, like, much of the history of, like, other people attempting to. What I do know is that, like, my experience is just a lot different than, I guess, what you would expect from a company who has this sort of branding as being this very employee-friendly workplace. You know what I mean? We've had situations with, like, where I've been sent home for wearing a union pin, where I've literally had to pull up the law. I pulled up the NLRB website and showed my manager and still got sent home. A couple other people were threatened with being sent home if they didn't remove it. More recently, now they pull us aside and tell us that if we keep wearing the pin, it won't meet expectations, or we won't meet expectations, which just means we won't get our next raise, essentially. But what's interesting is apparently over my weekend, on my days off, the messaging has changed to be, like, a little more vague but also a little more intimidating. Now they're saying you might not necessarily lose a raise, but there will be some future disciplinary action that they have yet to determine.
And so do you report this to the National Labor Relations Board?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We filed a bunch of ULPs, and I was literally just having a conversation with someone from the NLRB yesterday. So we're definitely on top of it, and, yeah, hopefully I'm a ruling will come down soon and they'll have to stop that. But the company's clearly very comfortable with breaking the law. There's also been like weird stuff too in terms of like messages that have been posted in the break room. There will be papers up there sometimes that aren't really signed by anyone, so we don't know if it's like actually coming from a manager or if it's coming from one of the crew members that are close with management who are sort of like heading their anti-union effort. But it's very convenient that they're not signed because one of the papers had the claim that if we unionize, the store would close, which is, of course, illegal to say. So like by them not signing it, that makes it very easy for whoever did it to like sort of get away with that.
Can you guys put up other unsigned messages? Like, maybe if we don't unionize, the store will close.
So
just don't sign?
Pretty much this. Yeah, right. So we had put up some stuff because pretty much, like, there's solid support throughout the store. We have a strong majority, but most of the anti-union activity is centered around, like, a handful of people who are, like, very close with management in the morning crew, right? So, like, what would happen is we would put up a paper, you know, I mean, that was just debunking a lot of these, like, wacky claims, because some of these claims are just, like, sort of just made up out of thin air. Like, I feel like you just say, like, did you know if there's a union? You could just make up anything at all, and that's just what they run with. So we pretty much had to put up a paper debunking a bunch of specific claims, but what ends up happening is, like, these people will just like write on our paper and just like write more misinformation. And it turned into like a break room war. So at this point, we just put up a paper saying the phone numbers of a couple people in our organizing committee. So like if people want to talk to us and get the information, you know, that door is open. But yeah.
I can't wait till you guys get to like the flyers that you then rub like some type of like, I don't know, like you like a, some type of like Vaseline or something like that, so nobody can write on other parts of it.
Yeah,
but I'm not
laminate things.
Laminate. Laminate, you can write on with the what do you call it?
All
Sharpie.
Right, yeah.
I've been in these type of wars before. Believe me, I know. I've been down. All right. So tell me, like, if this had gone on 5 years ago, Jamie, let's just assume you had been working there for. Mm-hmm. Would you have taken these steps? In other words, is there something in the air right now that you see what's going on with Starbucks? You see what's going on with Amazon? Maybe you're aware that if you've been listening to this show, that the NLRB is more sympathetic and helpful, you know, for these type of unionization efforts. Do these things sort of add up to you, you know, feeling like this is, we can do this?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like for me, like honestly, regardless of the time period, like I'm also just like a longtime socialist, so I have a very strict line when it comes to labor issues. Like on principle, I would have done this, but I definitely feel like a lot of our organizing committee and a lot of our support, by seeing what's been happening, when they see like these like lives getting like people successfully organizing, like in Amazon, you see like all these like Starbucks, which I think are like 100 unionized Starbucks at this point.
150, I think.
So like 150. God,
yeah.
Wow. So yeah, like, see, now I'm more motivated. So like stuff like that actually like reminds people like, all right, we actually have the power to do this. And like, I definitely feel like in the past when I would have conversations about unions with people, there was always this sense of like hopelessness, like realistically, this isn't going to work. And that's not really a thing anymore.
Why isn't it a thing? Is it because other people are aware of what's going on out there too?
Yeah, I think it's like a combination of a lot of factors. I think it's, honestly, I feel like with a lot of the union victories, like the really high profile ones, particularly like the stuff that we saw with like Amazon and everything, like I think people feel like this is something that's possible now. And those who pay attention also know that the NLRB is a bit stronger right now under Biden. So like, I think a combination of those things make people feel more optimistic about attempting to organize.
Why?
And also people are just angry, so that helps.
Angry as a function of what's going on specifically at that store, or just like, you know, COVID and COVID heightened that anger. I mean, I think it, for a lot of workers, it made them like really, it's almost like that, you know, a lot of people think their health insurance is good until they need it. I feel like COVID put people into a situation where they really, things got heightened, and they really saw, like, you know, at what point are you going to get, you know, essentially told to walk the plank by management.
Absolutely. I definitely think like COVID as a crisis is sort of like heightened the sort of like antagonisms that's already there between like the best interests of the workers and the best interests of the company. And I feel like with stuff like as simple as like those first couple of weeks when we're saying like we're not allowed to wear masks or gloves, you know what I mean? And everybody's terrified at that point. We don't know how serious this is going to be, yeah. And we have nothing to fight it yet. And stuff like that, and like stuff like not enforcing like the mask policy, things like that, I feel like really made people upset with the way things were going and made them say like, all right, this is like actually a matter of our safety. And for a lot of people who are living with family members who are immune compromised, it could be like a matter of life and death for people, you know? So yeah, I feel like that was a huge thing. And after the COVID stuff, when people like realized that they had to have some sort of control over their workplace to make these things change, I think that's when people started to also look back at all these other policy changes and say like, hey, like if we had control here, you know what I mean? If the people who are making this business run had a say in it, these things wouldn't be happening.
Well, lastly, you guys are forming an independent union. And we saw that in Amazon, particularly in Staten Island, not so much mm-hmm. in Bessemer. Mm-hmm. And what was the thinking behind that? At one point, did you think like we should contact an existing union, or it's better to be independent? What was the process of coming to that decision?
So, like, for me, when it comes to, like, conversations about organizing independently, like, I try to be really responsible with my messaging because, like, I feel like a lot of the way people have talked about a lot of the more established unions, not like you guys on your show, but I hear people sort of parrot the same talking points that you hear from, like, the corporate anti-union propaganda where they treat unions as if they're, like, a third party in the workplace. But I do think that by us organizing independently, that people would get a sense that this is a very Trader Joe's specific thing and that this is something that's just us, and it'll make it harder for the company to try to third party the union. But also, like, once again, I think that's something that should be considered carefully, and people have to really realistically look at things and see, like, do we have the support that we're going to need? Do we have the know-how? You know, do we have the resources? And it should be based off of that decision.
That's really interesting, actually, and that makes a lot of sense to me. It seems like it would be much harder for management to say, we don't want a third party coming in here when it's all just
right.
People have worked there.
They'll say it anyway, yep. But yeah.
They do still say it.
Yeah.
But people don't buy it, though, so it's something. Yeah.
And
the irony is that...
Go ahead.
The irony is that, like, on one hand, they'll say, like, these people don't know what they're doing. They're doing this independently. But then on the other hand, they'll also say, there's a third party that's, like, trying to take over your workplace. It's like, I feel like just pick one of those talking points. They don't both work together.
Well, I mean, it's also helpful, though, because it undercuts both of the talking points when they do that. I mean, it's we've talked a lot about, you know, Nancy Pelosi getting out there and saying we need strong Republicans. Also, vote for Democrats.
Yeah.
God.
All right. Well, so where in the process are you? Like, what happens? What's next?
All right, so right now, you know, we've officially filed and everything. We're still awaiting, like, a date from the NLRB, or I guess a date range from the NLRB. And then after that, we get to voting. So right now it's just about maintaining our support, you know, keeping the excitement up. And, yeah, that's pretty much it, you know.
And is any employees from other Trader Joe's around the country, and I know this might be a little bit sensitive, feel free to say I can't answer this or I don't know or whatever it is, mm-hmm. but have they reached out to you both with advice and seeking advice?
So right now our main focus is just like our store and our campaign. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Well, that's great. Anything else you think we should know, Jamie? Anything that we can do to help the effort?
I think this is a lot right here, and signal boosting this is going to help a lot. I would like to say to workers, you know what I mean? Like, you have the power to take control of your workplace. And, yeah, it's, a lot of it has to do with undoing a lot of the propaganda that people have learned from their company, because unfortunately, most of these folks, the only things that they know about unions, they've learned from their bosses. So, like, yeah, we have to be able to fight that. But, yeah, that's pretty much all, I guess.
Is there much of a union history in that area? I don't know if there was, you know, I mean, I know, you know, Worcester, we had sort of like is a post-industrial town. And so there's still, like, I think a decent, healthy amount of residual goodwill towards unions. Is that the case? You guys are just outside of Springfield, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, so I live in Springfield, but the store is in Hadley. So Hadley's like a more progressive college town. So I feel like there's a lot of support in general towards unions. And like I would even say it's probably would be easier for us to organize at this location than it would be like, let's say, if we were in a place that didn't have those same labor politics in general. But yeah, there's a lot of unions, and we've been able to work with a lot of different people from a lot of different groups. So that's been cool. And yeah.
Oh, that's right. So
healthy labor community.
If there are folks, you know, from that area who use that, who go to that Trader Joe's, is there anything that people who shop there can do to help you guys?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think like even when customers come in and they tell us like that they support what we're doing, like for me and for like a lot of other people at the store, that sort of like re-energizes us, yeah, because we have to deal with a lot while we're there. And that's always something that's good. And you can even talk to people who are in those Hawaiian shirts and tell them how much you support the union.
All right. Beautiful. Okay. Well, Jamie, we will keep us updated, please, on what's going on. Jamie Edwards, organizer with Trader Joe's United. Very exciting. And do you ever get to the Brimfield Fair out there?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Oh, you should go there. It's fun.
Word, word.
It's a lot of like, it's a big yard sale.
Brimfield Fair?
Yeah, it's good.
All right.
All right, Jamie, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you guys so much. All right,
yep.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Jamie.
Bye.
Thanks, Jamie.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Always like talking to the locals out from way west.
Oh, yeah?
You know, from
west. Is it actually very west in Massachusetts?
Like 30 minutes.
I've been to
35 minutes. Well, I don't know. Hadley to Worcester is probably closer to an hour because you got to go Springfield. You got to take small roads to
like,
get.
Like, is it west? Like Williams College
no,
is west.
No, that's east. It's
or
just
no,
above
east.
Hadley is just above Jeez. Springfield, and Brimfield is between Springfield and Worcester.
Wait, that's east.
What?
Wait, hold on.
Worcester is east of Springfield.
Oh yes. No, I know.
And Springfield, I believe, is east of like Williams. And,
right. That's okay.
But not too.
All right.
More of this
well,
in the fun
maybe
half.
It's actually the south. Yeah. This is where we're going to get into. Do I
directions
take
in Massachusetts?
Do I take? Do I can I take? You know, Route 9 out there. Would I would do that?
We'll pull, up MapQuest on the big screen and
would we,
just
would
click
I
around.
Do that if I was going? You know, I mean, 290 down to the Pike. Am I going too far south? Should I just take Route 9? I'm going through smaller towns, but I get to see Spencer. I get to see, you know, where.
And a special segment where Bradley and I talk about people we know and what exit off of the Garden State Parkway they live
That's
on.
That's the Jersey version. Like
163? Like,
do hey, I want to go to Belchertown?
Belchertown.
All right, folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member. Join themajorityreport.com. Don't forget. JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY and you will get 10% off. Stick with us in the fun half. I am going to address the rumors about the rumors of a campaign to draft me for the presidential nomination of the People's Party ticket. I'm going to address
Many
these.
People are saying.
I'm going to address the rumors about the rumors. In the fun half. In the meantime, Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
Okay, well, I actually have the People's Party guy on the mind, but I'll wait to the fun half, too. Tonight, patreon.com/leftbrecken, if you want to support the summer streams, which are free, post games for twitch.tv/leftreckoning. Viewers, also tonight the show will have Daniel Bessner and Derek Davison of American Prestige on, talking about Biden, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, a lot of foreign policy stuff. So check that out tonight, patreon.com/leftreckoning.
All right. Rob from Dedham is saying Brimfield's more between Worcester and Springfield. That's what I said on Route 20. That's fine, but I did say that. Dedham is so far east, he has no idea what he's talking about. All right, see you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What?
What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
What is up, everyone? Nomi Keen.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is it?
Yes.
Is it me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm gonna go start
life. Libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I wanna say. 857-210-35-501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$6,543 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, Sundial Guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. You gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.